It's all here.
A no-hitter, grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment, every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined tonight by my NBC Sports Chicago teammate, Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we are going to get Rob's thoughts on being live at a basketball event. Yes, Rob is in Las Vegas, and he watched USA Basketball's exhibition loss to Australia featuring one Zach LaVine. We're also going to get into the NBA Finals a little bit and check in with our old buddy, Bobby Portis.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast. We are going live to Las Vegas, where, as I mentioned in the tease, our esteemed colleague Rob Schaefer was live at a basketball game and live at a press conference. How did that feel? Let's start there. I have not been at a live press conference since March 2020, and you were in there for Pop, and was it Damian Lillard tonight?
Yeah, and the press conference was weirder than the game because we had been going to games for I don't even mean that because it was a testing press conference. That's another aspect of this, and as it would be after a loss, and especially with Pop. But just the fact that, you know, we'd been going to games all season at the United Center. They were empty games. This one had a decent sized crowd that were pretty active and loud and dissatisfied by the end. Obviously, a pretty American dominated crowd. There was a couple anecdotes. There was somebody, one guy alone counting down Joe Ingles free throws, counting down from 10, which I thought was pretty humorous. You know, some pretty excited chants when Damian Lillard was cooking at the beginning and Kevin Durant had a flurry of threes at the end, but ultimately frustration. But so the game was what it was. Presser, I thought, was the most surreal. Cause like you said, if I count them on my fingers, it's been 14 months since Kobe White started his first NBA game. And no, oh my God, see, I can't even do math. 16 months since Kobe White started his first NBA game. And we were all sitting socially distance in the bowels of the United Center. So that was weird. Interesting game, another loss. U.S. falls to 0-2 in the exhibitions. I would like to write it off as it just being the exhibitions, but they look not great. It doesn't look good from a connectedness standpoint, from an offensive fluidity standpoint, defensively. The intensity is not there. There are a lot of lapses. I joked to you in our group chat earlier, Casey, that the third quarter, especially in the second half as a whole, felt very Bullsian to watch in the third quarter specifically. U.S. had 6 turnovers and gave them 12 points off those turnovers as they fumbled away a 9-point halftime lead and then were trailing by 5 by the end of the third quarter. Patty Mills carves them to oblivion from there, and here we are. But it was a fun experience going to the game tomorrow too, today, as people are listening to this. I believe they're facing Argentina. So hopefully they can get off the schneid because it was a pretty dispiriting environment in the crowd. I mean, people move on pretty quickly. But then, you know, the presser, it just, as much as it can be explained away as they're still gaining chemistry and these are still exhibitions, there clearly is a little bit of tension here. Just a lot more is expected of USA basketball. So we'll see how they react and adapt.
Well, all I got to say, Rob, is I covered the 2008 Olympics, the 2012 Olympics, and the 2014 FIBA World Cup. And on my watch, USA basketball is undefeated. So you're 0 for 1 exhibition game or not. So pressure's on you for USA basketball.
Here's something I wanted to ask you, Casey, because you, albeit from home, but you watched this game. I tried to summarize the Nigeria game as best I could for you. Does this feel like something to be concerned about, given your level of perspective, having covered this team a couple different times? Does this feel like alarm bells should be blaring here?
Yes. Yes. Mostly it's not so much the losses, although those are pretty troubling. And in the Nigeria case, quite frankly, astonishing. But you can't assess USA basketball, and we're going to get into Zach LaVine here on a micro level in a second, but you can't assess USA basketball without viewing it through the prism of what these NBA players have gone through the last, you know, two disjointed seasons and all the demands, you know, of COVID, et cetera. So there's that. A lot of these players are coming fresh off of action, and then beyond the losses, they just look disjointed. And I know they're just exhibition games, and you know, in 3 weeks we could be talking about, you know, 15, 20 point blowout victories. We'll see. I mean, there obviously still is a ton of firepower on this team, but they just have not looked good these first two games. So it is a little troubling, disconcerting. I don't know what word you want to use, but before we get into Zach, I do want to get back to the media thing briefly, just because I don't want to bore our listeners too much, but it is pretty amazing because I went to the NBA draft combine at Wintrust Arena, and I ran into Arturis Karnišovas there briefly for just some chit chat. You know, the reporters were actually in a kind of a designated level away from where the executives were, but I kind of leaned over a railing and talked to him, and it was just amazing, you know, because that's the lifeblood of our business, is just casual talks and developing relationships and things like that. And again, in the grand scheme of things, this is way down the list of things impacted by a global pandemic, but you know, we've lost that completely. So as you mentioned, we were at home games at the United Center, but then we would flip on our laptops just to give the listeners an idea of what we do and interview players over Zoom. And the nice thing about you being out in Vegas is, you know, you were able to attend a live press conference, you know, and see people and talk to people in the flesh. So, what was that experience like? Cause it'd been so long. Was it just like riding a bike or what?
Nah, I don't know about riding a bike. It's a little weird. But like you said, yeah, just the casual conversations, especially along Media Row. Cause here too, it not quite a separate, section for media, but a little bit elevated. I'm not sure what the access would normally be, but we were kind of up on the 1 to 200 level. But yeah, I mean, conversations are natural. At the end of the day, everyone's a basketball person around here, right? So that's the common denominator. There are just little awkward moments of, should we wear a mask here? Should I not be here? You know, the city of Las Vegas, as you can imagine, is pretty lax on the COVID restriction front. But then you kind of walk into the NBA. Sphere or the NBA bubble, for lack of a better term, and things tighten up a little bit. But it was great to see people, human beings, around covering a basketball game. You know, I don't obviously have a relationship with Greg Popovich or Damian Lillard, but just, you know, seeing them in the flesh, answering questions, reading mannerisms. I stuck around for Joe Ingles's post game press conference too. He's always kind of a congenial, great quote. Just seems like a very like laid back, easygoing, insightful guy. So, you know, it definitely adds a layer, even if it's not, you know, my beat for more than a couple days here. And I'm obviously, you know, focused on the Zach angle of things a little bit more. But it was cool. It was cool. And I'm looking forward to going back tomorrow. And, you know, hopefully just getting to be around different areas, you know, before I go Thursday. But you know, it's a reminder of what was lost last season, and hopefully we're on our way back to even more normalcy than this, because obviously this isn't locker room access, which is even another layer deeper of, you know, what the real world is like. But hopefully it's a some kind of bellwether for better days ahead, because we do seem to gradually, you know, be moving in the right direction here.
And when you say tomorrow, for those listening, it probably means today. We're taping this late Monday, after USA basketball's exhibition loss to Australia, second straight loss, tonight. They face Argentina. The ghost of Andres Nocioni past is not suiting up for the Beloveds, but should be an interesting matchup. One more real brief nitpicky question, just because I'm curious. So you mentioned the masks. Were you wearing a mask on press row? Were you wearing one in the press conference? What was the protocol there?
Press conference was protocol mandated, yes. Press row, because you were kind of in – you were kind of just in a pocket of the general seating, the regulations at Mandalay Bay Resort Hotel, whatever you want to call it, and then Michelob Ultra Arena, which is inside it. Those regulations are, if you're vaccinated, which I am, mask off, or mask optional, I should say. So I walked in with that one on and then just kind of read the social cues of everybody on press row seemed to have them on. And I just figured it's, you know, I'm not trying to make anybody uncomfortable or anything like that. And I knew I was going to have to put it on to go back to the press conference room anyway. So I did wear one throughout the duration of the game, but moving about in the, you know, 115 degree pizza oven that is Las Vegas in the middle of July, I have not been wearing one. I don't know. I don't know how I'd make it back just breathing wise, just in a respiratory fashion, just given the heat here. But I did watch the game with one on and then in the presser. And, you know, obviously if you're going to be anywhere near these players or coaches who are, under such tight mandates and are going to Tokyo, which obviously that's a very tenuous situation very soon. You got to be, you know, on your P's and Q's around them.
Yeah, we don't need you in any headlines, Rob. We don't need
you. So and I'm just, you know, I'm just so not that guy.
You mentioned Joe Ingles, and I was going to have a joke and say it feels like the international 3-point distance is almost like unfair when it comes to that guy. I mean, the dude's just such a dead-eye shooter, and he was obviously pretty hot from three early for Australia. But our boy Zach was kind of off the mark from three tonight. I believe he was 1-for-4.
1-for-4. Those were all his shot attempts. I thought you were going to use this as a segue for Zach's probably lone shining moment of the game was stripping Joe Ingles on a step back attempt. I thought that's what the segue you were going for.
Well, yeah. Well, we're gonna get into the nitty. We're gonna get that much into the weeds of Zach's game because that's why you're out there, man. We're spending a lot of money to send you out there, so we're gonna break it down. We're gonna start on the offensive end. Yes, 1-for-4 from three. Played better offensively in game one against Nigeria. You know, we were talking about this offline a little bit. It just kind of has the feel, and it always did, and we could be wrong, but it always had the feel of Zach kind of being more of a situational guy or energy guy because, you know, when Devin Booker gets here, Middleton gets here, that kind of stuff, you know, I would guess his rotation turn would drop a little bit. He's in that second grouping for now. Although it did seem like Pop tweaked his rotation in game two, but you were there. Should stop blabbing and you go.
He did, but he pretty emphatically said after the game that starting lineups mean nothing. Rotations mean nothing. We're just, you know, throwing stuff at the wall. It's the exhibition games. He's trying out combinations. So the tweet today that I think dinged Zach was they swapped Jason Tatum and Bam Adebayo out of the front court starting five for Jeremy Grant and Draymond Green. Your mid first quarter subs at that point are Tatum and Bam. That's what Zach's turn had been in game one. He comes in at like the 2 or 3 minute mark of the first and third quarter. And then, you know, it adds up to 14 minutes instead of 22 because those stints were 6 to 7 minutes instead of, you know, in the 9 to 10 range. But yeah, he certainly played better offensively against Nigeria, seemed to be hunting his shot a little bit more. Just none of his 3-point attempts, except maybe the one that went in and maybe he had another one off the catch, seemed to be in rhythm. He's kind of in an interesting spot. It seems like, and this just kind of speaks to how weird, and maybe we should have done this in retrospect. Maybe we did, but just weren't really overanalyzing it because you just see the names and you think, well, this will obviously all fit together. But it's kind of an interesting roster in the sense that I don't really know where the true point guard is outside of Damian Lillard. He's kind of the obviously he's, you know, Dame is a scoring point guard first. He's obviously a very capable passer and facilitator and playmaker. But behind him, it's kind of been Zach at the backup one. He's been taking the ball up a little bit, initiating offense for others, you know, as well as himself when he can. But, you know, to go from 10 to 5 points, he only made one field goal attempt today. Two of those points came on free throws after he stripped Joe Ingles and got what was an intentional foul. So, he you know, it didn't seem like he was totally in rhythm. His minutes were less. The rotational turn was a little bit tweaked. I didn't read anything into that in the sense that he had done anything in game one to, you know, get him treated any differently in game two. But like you said, it kind of feels like a natural progression, especially when Holiday and Booker and Middleton get here, that that wing rotation is going to get squeezed a little bit tighter. But, you know, like I said, what's interesting is like Middleton and Booker coming in, those aren't necessarily solving your backup point guard problem, unless we're just going to play four wings and a big or five wings, which might be what this team has to do. But it's just kind of an interesting roster because they're very thin up front. They're very thin at point guard specifically. And then they're just kind of loaded with these two through four guy wing guys that just have not seemed to fit together yet. But, you know, to make a long story short, it wasn't as productive a game from Zach in the stat sheet. He looked pretty noticeably active defensively early. And then I thought that waned as the game went on, as it did really for everybody. Pop chalked it up to conditioning. You know, it could have been that. It could have been just general disconnect. But, you know, Zach is getting picked on a little bit there in the second half. But, you know, early on, you could really see the emphasis that he's putting on, trying to get up into guys' jerseys, play guys, you know, full court or three quarter court, or, you know, at the half court line. But, you know, it's just never going to be perfect. But I guess we'll see how he bounces back tomorrow, because that rotation spot will still be open for him tomorrow, or today, I should say. But today was a little bit of a step back. Australia, a pretty good defensive team, just seemed to bother them as a team a lot in that second half when they got outscored pretty resoundingly.
Yeah, I forgot Jrue Holiday when I was mentioning the reinforcements coming, Booker and Middleton. So, and there's a guy that to me screams like he's going to need some playing. This team's going to need him to get some playing time, because I've seen a lot of defensive issues. And I know it's early in the first two games. But that's a good segue into Zach's defense, because we've already kind of spotlighted the one possession where he really, I thought, bodied up Ingles really, really effectively, played him very physically, took contact in the chest, stripped the ball from him, and then drew a foul in the open court, which I believe was ruled a intentional foul?
Yeah, it was an intentional foul. Yeah. So
that was a really
two free throws and then the ball.
Yeah, that was a really nice defensive possession from Zach. And I would agree with you that in general, his and he told us this when we talked to him in the Zoom call last week. He's been really focusing on picking guys up full court, trying to turn them and take some time off the clock. I thought his activity on the ball was noticeably strong. It did, as you mentioned, maybe wane a little bit. I still saw a guy getting hung up on screens a little more than I would like, particularly early. Again, we're really parsing it down here, because this is what we do and because this is why you're there. But I will say, just in terms of his activity level and his engagement defensively, and just his kind of his acceptance of what probably is going to be a little bit of a role for him on this team, those are all good signs for not only Zach, but for the Bulls moving forward as well.
Yeah. So that's the interesting thing, right? He's playing a role on this team that is, and you could say this for almost anybody on the roster. Sure. It's not Kevin Durant. He's just playing a role that's so much different than his role on the Bulls that it seems like he's bought into that. Like I said, never perfect. Like there's a play in the third quarter that stood out where he got kind of blown by Dante Exum. There were a couple moments in the fourth where it seemed like, because they were switching a lot, it just seemed like there were miscommunications or botched assignments there. So, you know, it's really a team-wide shortcoming, the defense so far. So, you know, you don't want to put it all on Zach, especially when he only played 13 minutes. But it just seems like that's something that as a team they really have to get on the same page with and have to do quickly. It was really the first thing that Dame said in his post-game presser that kind of burned in my brain until the end was that, you know, the biggest thing that he was thinking about after dropping these two straight games is that a lot of these teams have played together for a while or just have a little bit more continuity in the roster or the play style or whatever you want to call it. And this team is kind of still trying to figure out how to be a team. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were scratching the surface of stuff in that first half. Maybe that was just Dame getting hot. Maybe it was something else. But yeah, the disjointedness is so apparent with them compared to other squads out there. And you just have to wonder if this roster is built in the right way, if there are enough kind of dirty work lunch pail guys. Like there's just a lot more questions now than I would have had this time last week. So I guess we'll see. I mean, the other thing is the two teams they played, as much as the Nigeria upset is such a huge upset on paper, they still had a decent amount of NBA guys that were on NBA rosters. So did Australia. So these are good teams that they're facing, and that's not to say that's not to make excuses for them. That's just to say it's not getting any easier from here. Like, we haven't seen Spain. We haven't seen Argentina. Like, we haven't seen a lot of these other teams that are going to be coming in guns blazing too. So
yeah.
Work's cut out for them.
So two more things for me on USA basketball before we put a wrap on that and move to the finals. I rarely tell you how to do your job, but I do want you to ask Zach one question for me, if you don't mind. Is the international ball affecting his shot?
I mean, So this is funny. This is funny. Our brains work the same. I actually had planned to ask him, maybe not that specifically, but just it's been a topic of conversation, like what the differences between the international game and, you know, the NBA game are. I've picked out a lot just on my own. And then you hear guys talk about the ball maybe being a little bit different. Obviously the 3-point line, the 3-second rule is probably the biggest thing right. that guys cite as a difference, just being able to clog the paint. And they got destroyed in the paint tonight against Australia, USA,
which could be a theme moving forward.
I think it was 44-24, the margin. But yeah, I will, because not only, you know, they didn't shoot a terrible percentage. They were 13-36. That's 36% from three, but the misses just look they just look unnatural for guys of this skill level.
Well, that's why I'm having a little bit of fun with it, but that's why I ask it. Even the free throw that he made after the Ingles foul, he just looked like he was shooting, you know, he's so pure. He's such a pure free throw shooter. And that just did not look normal to me. So it's just a fun little nugget. I mean, obviously
you want to know one other inconsistency I've seen between the NBA game and the international FIBA game.
Sure.
The pump fake jump into the defender 3-shot foul attempts.
Does not happen.
Those don't fly. And I'm almost like taken aback when they don't get called after watching this.
And I prefer it. It's how I hate that call in the NBA. I hate it.
I knew I would be appealing to you with that take, but it really is true. I mean, you could see guys trying it, and I don't think I've seen one work yet in the way that they work.
In general, I think if FIBA rules and international ball is a little bit more physical, which, you know,
definitely
I'm cool with that too. And then the last thing is I'm going to put you on the spot. If you can name Argentina's starting five.
No way.
You get to go gamble on me. No, I'm just kidding.
I give you Campazzo.
Yeah.
In there, right? Do you have it in front of you, or are you just making?
No, I don't. So I said I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, then who's holding me to account here? Yeah, Campazzo isn't
Nocioni.
Scola, didn't Scola still run with them?
No, I think he retired, didn't he?
Anyway. No, Scola's still around, and he's got a crew cut too.
I love it.
Those are the two until I get my game book tomorrow afternoon at whatever time, 3 p.m. Pacific.
And before we get into the NBA Finals, I want our listeners to know that I believe this is Rob Schaefer's first trip to Vegas. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
All right. You don't like a lot of information about yourself. You're like me, but he also, like myself, is not a gambler. But I told him he's got to go to the Strip. Come on. You got to go to the Strip once, even if you just go to People Watch.
No, of course I will. Today was a weird day, as you know, because traveling, got in late, kind of had an hour to refresh, and then was straight to pick up my credential and go to the arena. It was kind of a whirlwind. It's 110 degrees, kind of trying to meander around and not sweat through my clothes. And then obviously I had to run back to tape this tonight. But definitely either tomorrow night or Wednesday, because I leave Thursday afternoon, we'll hit that and do what I can. You know, obviously out here solo, but and I'm not much of a gambler. So, I, you know, maybe that's a good thing to dip the toe a little bit, because I probably won't get myself in too much trouble. But
yeah, and then I'm gonna text you Wednesday night, and you're going to be like, I got $50,000 on this free throw.
I just put in my 2 weeks. Yeah.
You're going to be like deep in the throes of gambling while watching game four at some sports book. I know it. I can just see your future. I can see how you're going to shake out, man.
Well, I will see. I will say walking out of Mandalay Bay today, it's kind of on the Strip. So I got a taste of it walking. It wasn't, I don't think, how you're supposed to experience the Strip, which is walking out from, you know, working for however many hours, and it's hot and you've been traveling all day and you're tired and you're just kind of walking and like people watching, to your point. It was certainly interesting. I'm going to come back in a better mood next time, and we will make the most of it.
All right. Well, you will be watching game four from Vegas. I will be watching from Chicago, and game three, was Sunday night, and obviously an impressive, really just otherworldly performance from Giannis, two in a row. And man, it's just remarkable, obviously, what he's doing. I was cheering for a competitive series. Not really, obviously, I have no dog in this race, so just cheering for a competitive series and good storylines. And our old friend Bobby Portis provided one. I happened to hop on his post-game Zoom. We even got our beloved third person Bobby Portis reference, which he used to drop with regularly here during his Bulls days. So it was like old times talking to Bobby. Although I did it via Zoom, there were also obviously reporters in Milwaukee, but I thought Bobby played really well. Injected that first half with his typical energy, really helped kind of, to me, the Bucks won with physicality and just kind of bully ball, really. And I thought Bobby kind of played into that. So we got a series now, and I'm happy for that. So what were your thoughts on game three and kind of moving forward where the series goes?
Yeah, the Ayton foul trouble thing, I think, shined a light on, you know, how much it feels in the grand scope of these playoffs. It might feel like an insignificant loss, but the loss of a guy like Saric, and I think the Bucks were feeling the loss of a guy like DiVincenzo for very different reasons, but in a similar vein of like a guy you wouldn't think could collapse the whole thing. For the first two games, obviously they get it under control a little bit here. It just feels like, you know, it's cliche, but it just feels like one of those series where the first team to win a road game is going to take it, because Phoenix obviously still in control to this point. Everything has gone chalk, and you know, if you're them, you got to hope that Booker comes back, has a better game. You hope you didn't waste the Jay Crowder game where he goes 6-7 from three, and you just hope that you can keep Ayton out of foul trouble for the most part, because that's, you know, whether you have to go small or whether you have to go with Kaminsky, you're just not built to stop a guy like Giannis the way he's playing right now, without a guy like Ayton on the floor. That's the biggest thing to me to watch the next game. But really, I mean, I've just been bowled over by the dominance of Giannis. I think back-to-back 40-10 games. Just think about the way we were talking about that knee injury
right. This
time last week.
Right.
It just looked so gruesome in the moment. It just felt so, you know, in a dark way, kind of poetic for this season. That was going to be how the Bucks were either going to go out or they were going to have to play the finals without him. And for him to not only come back, but to kind of have one game where he, you know, feels his way back in, and he's still at 20-17 or whatever in game one. And then to just come out and do what he's done the last two games, even though they didn't win game two. I think that's, you know, you got to feel really good about that. If you're Milwaukee, you need my guy, Chris Middleton, to step up a little bit more offensively. Drew obviously got off the schneid a little bit last game, but I probably would expect Milwaukee to win game four, level it up. They seem to, obviously, as any team would, play much better at home, but it was good. I don't really have a rooting interest one way or the other, but it was good to see them make this a series, because these two teams, you know, as much as people say it's a disappointing finals matchup, I think when they're both firing on all cylinders, it's still pretty high level basketball. It's pretty aesthetically pleasing and entertaining basketball. So I'll be interested to see where it goes from here.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot one more time as we search for any Bulls angle possible. Frank Kaminsky is the nephew of?
Oh, man. Bulls related? Can you give me a time bracket?
Recent and lengthy.
Recent and lengthy.
You'll never get it.
What?
His aunt.
I don't know.
His aunt is Karen Stack Umloff, the longtime executive assistant to Jerry Krause and also assistant coach under Jim Boylan. So there.
Wow. Yeah, I would.
And a hell of a basketball player, Northwestern herself. So
go Cats, baby.
Yeah, that is a relative connection you did not know, but now you do, and you're all better for it. But Rob's got to get some sleep. He's had a long day taping this. In the lush, are you on the penthouse suite at the
No. Where are you? No, I've got a great view of the monorail and, you know, the lights in the distance reminding me of what I'm missing out on as we talk about Bobby Portis and Frank Kaminsky.
All right. Well, you got to hit the strip and also hit the hay. Thank you for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast, and we'll catch you again soon. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.
Did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the U.S. is imported from overseas? It's staggering. That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. When you buy Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, but you're also supporting American farms. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef better than organic chicken and more. Delivered quickly and safely to your door. Don't play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use the code Chicago for $20 off and free express shipping.